Law Focus Podcast.
Law Focus with Millicent Duweni and Tsepo Mohapi. Tuesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. on Power FM.
To our listener, welcome to Law Focus on Vive M 88.1. It has just gone 1 minute after seven this evening. My name is Millicent Ndiweni and I'm with Tsepo Mohapi, and together we are your hosts for the show. Thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you will enjoy our conversation. Law Focus is here to inform you about your legal rights as well as explore various topics that are legally related. Tonight, we're discussing how far we are as a country in terms of progressive legislation and processes for members of the LGBTQIA+ community, especially around name and gender marker changes. We've recently been witnessing the judiciary being under the spotlight. There have been allegations of judges being paid and the credibility of the legal fraternity being questioned. Of course, this issue seems like it will be on discussion for a while. Mm. Even President Cyril Ramaphosa came out yesterday and released a statement on the matter. He essentially stated that attacks on the judiciary shouldn't be taken lightly, and he further stated that such attacks shake the very foundations of the country's constitutional democracy, and unless those allegations are supported by evidence, such claims undermine confidence in the courts and weaken constitutional order.
Yeah, interestingly, EFF leader Julius Malema and the former president, Mr. Jacob Zuma, are among those who made allegations on the judiciary. It's interesting because it seems to me that the judiciary is beginning to squeeze both of them, and now they're both squealing. But I suppose a story for another day. On a different note, the weather service has issued a flood warning for various parts of Gauteng for the remainder of this week. So we hope that you guys all remain safe. Going back to gender-based violence, we've been witnessing the case of the slain lady, Tsegofatso Pule, and it's unfolding in the Roodepoort Magistrates Court out in the West Rand. Tsegofatso's body was found hanging from a tree in Durban Deep, and that's somewhere in the West Rand. At the time that she was murdered, she was 8 months pregnant. And I must indicate the new revelations that are coming out of this case over the past few weeks are truly shocking. Truly they are shocking. And I think we'll hear a bit more about it in our legal hotspots. Today's an auspicious day for many, many matriculants because the Minister of Basic Education, Angie Motshekga, released the 2020 matric results. They've been delayed, of course, because of the COVID pandemic. This normally would happen much earlier in the year or even sometimes late the previous year. And the matric results have once again, Free State is number one. Well done to the Free State. And it's kept its pass rate at 85%, followed by Gauteng, which was at 83.3%. And then Western Cape was very close behind at 79.9%. Now, huge congratulations to the class of 2020.
Yes, please.
Well done.
Well done.
You've done extremely well considering that normal teaching and schooling was interrupted during the COVID-19 outbreak. It's been a really challenging year for you academically, and it's a very important year. Now, for those of you who didn't make it, remember that there is help out there. It's not the end of the world. Things such as self-harm or suicide are really not an option. Don't give up on yourself. It's really important to realize that a matric result, although it is important, is only a stepping stone to the rest of your life. So you can't do it again. There are things that you can do to help yourself. Don't give up on yourself. And if you really begin to feel disappointed, anxious, depressed, you can always talk to somebody. And there are various organizations, but I'd like to point out the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAG, S-A-D-A-G. And they're available on their 24-hour helpline. It's free, and it's 0800-456-789. So it's 0800 456 789. I remember, dear listener, that you're able to contribute to the conversation by reaching us, myself, Millicent, and our producers on our various social media platforms. So we're available on Twitter at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus. On Facebook, we are VowFM. You can also find us on Spotify, and you can also access our podcast by visiting vids.journalism.co.za/law, or you can also visit the Vids Radio Academy page on Iona. Now, let's start with the first feature of the week. As I always say, one of my personal favorites is the top legal story for the week, our legal hotspots.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, it's Legal Hotspots.
As Tsego was speaking earlier, he did allude to the fact that we're going to delve more in the legal hotspots on Tsego Fatso Pule's murder case. And that is the first story that we have for the week. Her case has basically been postponed to the 1st of March this year. And the alleged mastermind behind Pule's murder, Nkululelo Ntokozo Shoba, who was her boyfriend, appeared at the Roodepoort Magistrate Court yesterday on Monday for a bail hearing. Shoba faces charges of murder, conspiracy to murder, and defeating the ends of justice. According to the National Prosecuting Authority, in a statement, the 32-year-old Shoba was arrested following a plea explanation tendered by Mzukayise Malifane, who entered into a plea and sentence agreement with the state. So Malifane has been sentenced to an effective 20 years imprisonment. He implicated Shoba as the contractor for Pule's murder, and he detailed that Shoba offered him 70,000 rands to carry out the murder. He further revealed that Shoba had wanted Pule dead and didn't want his wife to find out about her pregnancy. According to Malifane, the initial plan was to hang Pule from a bridge in Maritzburg and use her phone to write a suicide message on her WhatsApp status. He detailed that the first attempt on Pule's life failed after she never pitched up for a job interview at a restaurant next to Golji City, where Shoba had arranged Malifane to pick her up. And then on the 4th of June, Shoba once again informed Malifane that Pule would be visiting his place and that he would call him to collect her. After receiving the call from Shoba, he collected Pule and drove to Noordgesig, where he shot Pule and drove to Durban Dep in Roodepoort to hang her on a tree. Malifane was arrested on the 15th of June in 2020 last year, and he was charged with murder, obstructing the ends of justice, and unlawful possession of firearm and ammunition. What a tragic, tragic and very painful story.
Yeah, just when you think you've heard the worst, something else emerges just to make your soul sink a little bit more. I don't know when we're going to come to some kind of turnaround with this gender-based violence problem we have in South Africa. And it's a pandemic. Well, a little bit more towards the law side of things, the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo has filed an application wherein he's asking the Concord to have the former president Jacob Zuma jailed for 2 years. This is for contempt of court. Eyewitness News has reported that in Monday's papers, the secretary of the commission, who is the applicant in the matter, and the respondents are Zuma, the Minister of Police, Becky Cele, and the National Commissioner of SAPS, that is General Kehla Sithole. The commission has stated that Zuma's failure to appear before the commission and to file affidavits as directed by the court were the grounds on which he should be found guilty of contempt. The news outlet further stated that the commission wants the court to set aside the normal rules for the application and that the application should be heard on an urgent basis. And it said that Zuma's failure to appear at the commission and to file the affidavits was unlawful and intentional. Zondo said that the court should order that the Minister of Police, as well as the SAPS, take the necessary steps to ensure that Zuma is jailed for a period of 2 years. And it wants him to pay the costs of the contempt application. And what the newspapers, News 24, also highlighted is that this is believed to be the first of its kind in South African history. Now, of course, a contempt application is not the first of its kind. That's not what they're talking about. That happens every day all over the country. It is unusual that it's being done on an urgent basis. But what's really striking is that they're asking for 2 years imprisonment for the former president. That's an unusual thing to ask for. Some commentators have made real criticism or given real criticisms about the length of time which the commission is asking for. But it's one thing what you ask for, it's another what you get. So let's see what the Concord says about it. All right, those were our legal hotspots. We'll be back just after this.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week. It's Legal Hotspots. Law Focus with Millicent Dueni and Tsepo Mohapi.
It's just gone 13 minutes past 7. Welcome back to Law Focus. And we're going to be discussing, you know, issues around gender identification, whether our laws are really where they're supposed to be. We all grew up in a society, in a system, in a school, in a church, in a family where you were either male or you were female, and there was really nothing in between. And now we must really acknowledge that some people, and the number is growing, don't necessarily identify as male or female. And the question is, but why should they? And why shouldn't we, as a country, as a society, accommodate them? I'm going to hand over to Millicent now to introduce our guest.
Okay, indeed. We have on the line with us Sibusiso Kaswa, and he's going to delve further into this very interesting and informative conversation with us. Welcome to Law Focus, Sibusiso. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Hi, good evening, and good evening to the listeners.
Yes. So basically, perhaps you can start by introducing the kind of work that you do and you being involved in the LGBTQIA+ community.
Oh, yes. I've worked in the sector for almost 2 decades now, and currently I'm working for an organization called Iranti. We are based in Johannesburg, and we use media to do advocacy.
Okay. And how's that going? You use radio stations and everything else. How does that go? How's your work fulfilling the, you know, teaching people about the community, especially in terms of the legalese?
Okay, so we create media. We, have media projects that we work on to do public education, and we train journalists, and we do radio interviews like I'm doing now, and social media, mainly just to, you know, advocate for transgender, intersex, binary, and lesbian and queer women.
Oh, okay.
All right, so what are the various pronouns that people use to identify themselves?
Yeah, pronouns, of course, we are used to she and he. Those are the main ones that people use. But more and more, we have non-binary people, you know, those who do not necessarily identify as men or women. Mm. Or sometimes they identify with both, and they prefer to use a pronoun they.
Right.
They feel that it's more representative of their gender identity.
So if we have, you know, our IDs in South Africa, everybody's allocated an identity number at some point in their life. As long as you're South African citizen, you get an identity number. And the identity number actually contains a lot of information about who you are. And one of them, the seventh digit, actually tells the reader whether you're male or whether you're female. Now, to accommodate non-binary and transgender and intersex person, what is the recommendation? Some I've heard say we should use the letter X, or perhaps another digit. or other marker which would help us identify that this person is neither male nor female, or whatever the case may be. What's your take on that kind of a suggestion?
Yeah, I'm sure listeners would have heard even via the media or themselves have read the proposed identity management policy that came from the Department of Home Affairs. The first thing they are proposing in this regard is a randomized number. So it's a gender-neutral number, you know, unlike the current situation where gender is coded in the ID number. So as the movement, as the sector, as the LGBTI organizations, we are in support of that, because then, you know, then there's no issue. Everybody's just a number, you know. But in terms of male, female, because then, remember, in your passport, you must still have a male and a female.
Yes.
In terms of male and female, there we are proposing an X, and that X stands for unspecified.
Right.
So it should be, and we want it not only to be accessed, that to be reserved for the non-binary, transgender, and intersex persons. We want all South Africans to be able to access the X, because now, remember, if it's now reserved for the gender minorities, then that creates a problem.
There's the potential for stigma there.
Exactly, because now if you know, this person, Rufila has X, then Rufila must be one of them. If you don't like them, the people you call them, then you are likely to deny Rufila services and discriminate, and sometimes even violence.
So I suppose one of the questions I should have started with was, what actually is the difference between gender and sexuality? It seems like a subtle difference, but it seems like an important one. Maybe it's not as subtle as I think it is.
Well, sexuality is broader, right? Sexuality is broader. But when we, you know, include, you know, your intimacy, your attractions, and all other elements. But with gender, in sociology, they call it, it's a social construct. You know, it's just a role in society. It's just how people identify themselves as men and women. It's just how people express themselves as men and women, right? So it's mostly along those lines. That's what gender is about.
Right.
While sexuality is much more broader than that.
Right, okay, I see.
Now, do you think also then, specifically, so the government, especially the Department of Home Affairs, do you feel like they are not prioritizing the LGBTQIA plus community in their system, you know, by not, you know, ensuring that they incorporate anyone? Because it sounds like a very difficult issue to tackle, listening to you explaining about the X being added to our different identity numbers and passport numbers, etc. It must be a very difficult process in terms of the law to change that.
Yeah, at the moment, up to date, we have a law in South Africa, and the law is called the Alteration of Sex Description and Sex Status Act 49 of 2003. So that law is important for the population we are talking about, the non-binary, transgender, and intersex, because that law allows people to go to Home Affairs and say, in actual fact, I was assigned female at birth, and in actual fact, I identify as male. So can you please change that? And obviously, Home Affairs is supposed to change that and give you a new identity number that reflects the gender, your gender identity. But up to date, then, the issue has been, the law has been implemented very badly, right? So one, there are no procedures. So when you're talking about government not prioritizing, I will agree with you there, because it's the law of 2003, as I said, but up to now, 2021, there's still no procedures in place on how to implement that law, right? Mm-hmm. So then, if there are no procedures, it means it leaves it in the hands of the frontline staff at Home Affairs to interpret the law. And many a times, they misinterpret it, and as a result, then they deny people that service of going there and actually apply for your gender marker to be changed. Sometimes you find that people have to wait for many, many years or 3 years or so, and you can imagine in the meantime that you have an ID that doesn't reflect who you are, like you are a female now, but your ID says you are male or vice versa, then it puts you in a very difficult position where you know it's difficult even to go to retail shops because this is not your ID.
I can imagine.
It's difficult even to vote and all others, even to apply for housing. It just becomes life becomes very difficult.
But so far, has there been successful changes from Home Affairs in terms of people applying? Are there people you know who've managed to successfully, make it through to the other side?
Yeah. The fact that now it leaves in the hands of the officials. So if you are lucky enough, then you go to the Home Affairs office where, maybe they are clued up, and then if you're lucky, then your thing will be processed, and then it will just be a few months. But if you are so unlucky, then it will be years,
sure.
Right? So with the proposed policy, things are very promising. Home Affairs seems they want to do it right this time around. And so our job as a civil society is to make sure that happens. So there's an ongoing discussions and ongoing consultation with Home Affairs to really, really get the policy right. And when the policy is right, then the laws will be right.
All right. Well, those of you who are outside our footprint, you can stream us live on vfm.co.za, and listen to our conversation on challenges being faced by members of the LGBTQIA+ community in terms of legislation on gender market changes, among other issues. And right now, you were hearing and you are hearing the voice of Sibusiso Keswa, who comes to us from an advocacy organization for the rights of the LGBTQIA+ people, and it's called Iranti. It's gone 25 minutes after 7, and we continue our conversation with Sibusiso. We still have a very long way to go as a country to adapt to the reality that there are various genders out there. Some people are still, struggling to accept, and they stigmatize. And according to our constitution, everyone has the right to be identified in whatever way that they choose to. What do you then think, Sibusiso, can be done to speed up the process, especially to lawmakers who are the ones who are ultimately responsible for the implementation of policies and laws that are still discriminating the LGBTQIA+ community, even in the 21st century?
Yeah, I think, the Constitution is the document, an aspirational document, right? That's where we want to see South Africa. That's how South Africa should be. But at the moment, it's not like that. In the same way that says everybody has a right to housing, we know there's so many homeless people, right?
Yeah.
So it's a similar situation where there are so many rights that are promised by the Constitution, but at the moment, those rights are not a reality. So it is our job as South Africans, it is our job as government to see to it that we get to that point where the promises of the Constitution become a reality, right? So, but the Constitution is still a very important document, because when somebody discriminates me and says you cannot get this job because you are gay, because you are trans or bisexual, whatever, then I can take those people to court and say you are being discriminatory, you are being against the Constitution. Mm. So the Constitution is an important document because it sets the standard, right? So then, such that all other laws of the country should align with the Constitution, including the practice. So that's why then people who keep violating human rights of other people, immediately you can take them to court and say, this person has violated my rights because A, B, and C. So all in all, I want to say we still have a long way, you are right. As a result, this conversation that we are having, and hopefully 1 or 2% or listeners will be learning a thing today, and hopefully their minds or their hearts will shift in a positive direction. So more and more education.
I hear you that there are avenues available for recourse, which is a wonderful thing. And we do have some very good legislation in South Africa when we look at the Constitution, etc. And our courts, we do have, you know, things like the Human Rights Commission, the Equality Court, all of that. But I'd like to know, on a daily basis, you know, what is it from someone who's not a member, but what is it as a member of the LGBTQI community that really, what is the daily grind? The things that really make it difficult on a daily basis. I imagine people are not every day being insulted. Every day, someone is not going to be beaten every day. But what are those little things every day that make life just that little bit more difficult, that are a reminder that our society perhaps doesn't always reflect the wonderful laws that we have?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you know... A guy called McGee, and he's got a YouTube
yes,
thing.
Yes, I heard.
Recently, he made a very, very homophobic and transphobic comment via his channel. And of course, then he had to be called to order, right? And then later he apologized. So on a daily basis, then, we still have people who are very ignorant. Sometimes they think it's just a joke. They make a joke about an LGBTI person, and, you know, expecting people to laugh. And for those people who are conscious enough, they need, in the same way that we cannot stand people who do who commit gender-based violence, in the same way that we frown upon those people, then we should frown upon people who are, you know, who are transphobic or homophobic. You know, when you are sitting with your friends and, you know, they make this gay joke, you need to correct it and say, dude, it's not funny. In the same way, we should discourage people who are xenophobic, you know, that, you know, out of that joke, somebody will take a next step and the next step and the next step, and it can end up very, very bad. You know, sometimes people, just like with racism, sometimes people, they don't say, you know, I don't hire you because you're black. But as soon as they realize your sexuality, then you are immediately excluded. Mm. You know, we are currently busy with a case, a very big case of a trans person who works for a big company here in Johannesburg. And you know, the person is a trans woman, and they said, no, cannot use the same change rooms with other women. On a daily basis, it could be in sports, it could be at the workplace, it could be at school, where you find that you have a trans child, and the school does not allow the person to use the toilet that,
that other people are
used by the same gender.
Yeah.
So it's still a long way to go, but we keep doing it.
Oh, thank you, Sibusiso. We really appreciate that insight and some of those heartfelt examples that you've given us. I mean, ultimately, all of us need a little bit of empathy. It doesn't matter whether for someone who's straight or gay or male or female or any other gender. Empathy, I suppose, is what will get us there. It's just gone 28 minutes to 8 o'clock. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back in a few minutes with our next guest, who's going to unpack this topic just a little bit more.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
And welcome back to Law Focus. We're discussing quite a deep conversation today around gender and LGBTQIA plus community and gender markers, pronouns, all of the things that some of you might be uncomfortable with. Mm-hmm. It's still a conversation that needs to happen. When I say some of you, I'm excluding myself. Let me say some of us, let's be honest. I say some of us as a community, as a country, may be uncomfortable with, but it's a conversation that still needs to happen. We're approaching 8 o'clock quickly, a little bit too quickly for my liking, so let's get straight to it. There are some legislative processes which are going ahead and they seem to be progressing, but that doesn't mean that the challenges don't still exist in this country. The Department of Home Affairs, they've gazetted it's a draft identity management policy. And it's partly in a bid to make South Africa's identification system more inclusive. At the moment, it's binary. It's male or it's female. The document states that gender and sexual identity minorities are excluded because the current laws and policies don't really cater for changes in gender, sex, etc. within the identification system. And obviously, in South Africa, you need to be identified correctly in order for you to be able to access all sorts of basic services. So it's a challenge.
And if you missed it, we've already spoken about reports of a lot of LGBTQIA plus community members who have allegedly been experiencing discrimination when attempting to register or update their gender in the department's ID system, that is the Department of Home Affairs. And according to the gazetted document, the structure of an ID number, including its format and its length, requires careful consideration of country, context, and privacy concerns. That includes gender somehow being thrown in there. So we're going to invite to the show Ms. Tish Lumas White, with whom we will go in depth with, and she's going to be addressing the issue of using the third person plural pronoun and why it's important in this day and age to be considerate of how everyone identifies themselves and how we call other people. Tish has have worked extensively on sexual orientation and gender identity advocacy. They are very passionate and committed to social justice advocacy and creating safe spaces in higher learning institutions and beyond. Welcome, Ms. Tish White, to Law Focus, and thank you for joining us. Did I pronounce that correctly, the MX?
Thank you. Most people pronounce it MX, as in like, different you do when you're busy baking and cake, and you're combining the ingredients.
Okay. Let's begin with the challenges that you are experiencing and have experienced in the past in terms of legitimizing your identity as a transgender person?
Well, as a South African citizen, when I was 16, like many of my peers, I got my ID book. And as I grew in my identity, I very quickly realized that this was not the name that I wanted. This was not a gender marker, you know, that affirmed who I really was. And so there was a stage of, I think, what some misguided people may have seen as rebellion, where I unfortunately attended a school where we had to wear name badges. and it was mandatory for the people who attended the school to wear their first name on a badge on their chest. And the school continuously refused to give me a opportunity to buy a badge that had my name on it. So it really started with me just sitting there designing my own badge and just stapling it onto my uniform.
Pardon me, just designing your own...
In 2017, I went to the Department of Commerce, EDL branch, and asked to change my first and last name. There's no point in changing my gender marker because it doesn't exist yet. And that process has been going on for 4 years. And during this process, the biggest challenge for me has been that the Department of Foreign Affairs has delegitimized me. So they've created a block on my profile on their system for trying to change my name. And this means I can't get a legal ID, which means I can't fly. It means that I can't bank. It has all sorts of implications for so many aspects of my life. But it was basically, if I were to sum it up in one word, it makes me feel like I'm a ghost.
Sounds like it's a very challenging, just the lifestyle just becomes so difficult when you are not accommodated by most, if not almost all factors of society. Your life almost kind of stops because of the legal, ramifications that don't cater for trans people.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Oh, it was just a statement that I was making, listening to, your story. I think it's so difficult. There's so many things you can't do simply because you are identified as trans, and at the moment, the law doesn't cater for, your gender change. It does not sound like it's an easy journey at all. Can you perhaps then elaborate to our listeners?
In terms of how my physical transitioning impacts on my legal identity.
The legal identity is what I was speaking about.
Of course. So that is one wild time that a good former friend of mine once described as an experience of being, or well, rather, pretending to be a very bad secret agent.
Wow.
And basically just living in a world that refers to somebody that doesn't exist. And unfortunately, the secret spy agency gave you a really gross name, but you kind of just got to work with it. They gave you a really gross gender identity that isn't you, but you kind of just got to work with it. And I think that is one of the approaches I've taken, from that particular person that has helped me in a mental health capacity, because it is exhausting, demeaning, and dehumanizing to constantly be referred to as your dead name or be misgendered on a daily basis.
Wow.
So for me, that put it into perspective, but There's 3 steps that need to be taken, but only 2 are really taken by people who perceive my gender identity, who will see me, for example, going into maybe a shop, and will then try and identify my gender. So this could be on a phone call from, I don't know, maybe somebody selling insurance. It could be in a shop, it could be in many different spaces. People will look for clues. I've been on HRT for 4 years now, in the form of injectable testosterone, so I have a beard. Mm-hmm. My body fat has redistributed, so I don't have hips anymore. A lot of my chest tissue is atrophied, and I'm in the process of trying to access what we refer to as top surgery, to remove what is left entirely. Obviously, as you can tell, my voice is deeper being somebody you would typically associate as being a woman, whatever that means, because women have all kinds of voices. So all these cues I pursue and really hope that people are going to take one step. Hi, how are you? Take two steps. Welcome to the safe zone. Take the third step by saying, you know, articulating a respectful kind of iteration of gender. And that's where you get people who will say, good morning, sir, and then halfway through a conversation change to ma'am. Or, you know, people will call me ma'am and then say, I'm so terribly sorry, sir. And it's very weird.
I'm very curious, Tish, about you know what you're talking about now. Why is it so crucial then for us to first and foremost, when communicating with someone, to first find out what name, what pronouns, and what title they use to avoid, you know, like what you're describing in your experience, these offensive remarks that are just like, okay, you know?
It is absolutely critical because you're affording like another human being your basic respect.
Mm.
If I need to put it that simply, you are affording somebody some, you know, respect that is due to them. And honestly, the only person that can tell you what their gender is, and I include children in this as well, is the person themselves. Mm-hmm. And that gender may change over time. That gender might stay static. So generally what I tell people in our safe sensitive training is that it's really important when you meet somebody for the first time, you ask, you know, hey, it's your name's Tish, right? Yeah, it's really good to meet you. Good to meet you too. Fantastic. Look, I just want to make sure that I'm respectful of your identity and I don't want to call you something that may distress or hurt you. Please could you let me know what are your what is your title, what pronouns do you use, and what name do you use? And I could get back to the table, thank you. Thank you for asking. That actually really means a lot. And say, well, my title's Mix. My pronouns are they, them. And, you know, you can refer to me as Tish. And after that conversation, the most crucial point is to ask that person who they're out to. So when I say out, I'm referring to the closet. Mm. The metaphorical closet, not the literal closet.
Yes.
And trying to establish, because in my context of my job, I don't want a young transgender man to come into my office and tell me about how, I don't know, you know, maybe he wants to change courses because his courses, he feels, are not what he really wants to do. And says to me, please can you call my mom and just like let her know that I'm getting help for the gender stuff, you know, and that I'm doing okay. So I said, well, okay. Obviously, I won't divulge any confidential details that we've discussed in our session, but I'm happy to call her. Just give me her number. I call mom and I'm like, so, good evening, person. So your son has been seeing me for 3 weeks and we had a session today. Halfway through the conversation, I get a what son? Son, I don't have a son. Who are you talking to? I think you've got the wrong number. Which is why it's really important whenever you ask somebody what their name, their pronouns, their title are, ask them who knows.
Mm.
Ask them who they're out to. Because I could now have created a situation in somebody else's household where this guy is going to get kicked out of his home by his mom because I just revealed his identity to her. And, you know, obviously we had huge problems if that happened. So, yeah, always, always important to ask, just for the sake of safety and to not assume.
Well, Tish, thank you very much for joining us tonight. It's been an incredible conversation with you. You've given us many things to look out for. And I think we all are going to walk away from this a little bit more aware of some of the challenges that exist for the LGBTQI community. We really appreciate your time tonight. Good night.
Thank you very much.
Well, that was Tish White. She is an activist, and she's also here at WITS, doing great work with the LGBTQI community, giving us a great deal of information about what to be sensitive about, what the challenges may be, and some of the practical day-to-day things. I've never walked into a shop and someone has said hello ma'am to me. You know, little things like that, which can, little things like that that you don't notice if you're not in a position where people do make errors or do throw insults. It's something to think about because it's not always part of each and every one of our lives.
Yeah, and you know, even that issue of mental health that she mentioned when she was sharing her experience, that's something else that, you know, a cisgender person would not suffer from mental health as a result of gender identity and people making assumptions, or you know what I mean? Some of these privileges are, I guess it's quite profound what other people really go through.
You never notice it until somebody actually tells you and explains it to you. Well, we've come to the end of another show. Thank you for joining us. We've definitely learned something tonight on tonight's topic, something that perhaps we need to learn, all of us. Not perhaps, we definitely do need to learn. To our guest Tish White and Sibusiso Khwesa, thank you for sharing your knowledge with us and some of your experiences and making us open up to things that we're not always aware of. To our production team, our producer Rifile Mekwa and our technical producer Kutwana Serame, thank you for putting the show together. For us, really, we appreciate your guys' work. It's always stellar. For myself, Tepo Mapia and Millicent Ndweni, it's always a pleasure being with you every Tuesday night. We hope you enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you for tuning in tonight. And we'll see you again at the same time, same place next week. Good night.
Good night.
Your Focus Podcast.